Ellie and I are on time for this episode. We are being accountable. Hi, Ellie.
We are accountable. You know, that's actually a really interesting way to start this podcast because, okay, we've all had working relationships. And, you know, if you're a teacher, you're in education, you have people who have different definitions of the word time, timeliness, being on time, what that means for class or for your job or when you wake up in the morning, how much time you give yourself, all that stuff. And I will say to all the listeners on here that Peter is a very punctual person. Like, if you set a meeting with him, he's going to be there. He's going to be on time, if not early. I am like definitely the same way. I'm not a late person. And, you know, when you can find someone that has the same like accountability to time as you, lean into that. That's just like a, you know, something maybe it's related to education, but it's just like a life thing. Not everyone sees time the same way.
I don't know. I've been told that because I'm German. I'm really not that German. It's just the last name. But it definitely came from, you know, I don't know. I feel like people think like they have to be a certain way because of their, you know, their heritage and where they, but I'm really actually more English than anything. So, but yeah, I mean, accountability, like, you know, skill sets, durable skills and all this. And this is where we're going to go in this podcast. This, so it kind of sprouted out, and we'll talk about some articles here that ended up in the New York Times and such, but it started with, I think there was a TikTok out there, or it couldn't have been a TikTok because I don't really watch that much TikTok, but it might have been a reel that was a TikTok, vice versa now, where a teacher kind of came on and said, do you really want to know the real reason why a lot of teachers are leaving? It's not money. It's accountability and behavior of students where we can't hold them accountable. Did you ever feel any of that? Did you feel any of that when you know, you've been out for, it's like so funny when I say that, you've been out of prison for about a year and a half now. No. So, but like since you left, do you remember any accountability challenges? I mean, COVID, post COVID, pre COVID.
100%. Accountability is a precarious balance beam in education. Mm-hmm. In even the, you know, it doesn't matter if it's an urban school, suburban school, private, public. I think this is an issue that transcends all types of schools. Mm-hmm. And I say that because the helplessness comes out in different ways. So, right, whether it's holding students accountable academically or behaviorally or both, mm-hmm. okay, there's this sense of helplessness because if you're at a more affluent school, you have typically more involved parents, but that comes with the caveat of you have bulldozing, helicopter, snowplow type parents that are over-involved and really are like, what are you going to do for my kid? Mm-hmm. And then you have district policies that do or do not help students be accountable. And if you're at a school that maybe doesn't have as much parent involvement, and you still have behavioral issues because there isn't parent involvement. And so there's on all sides of this, accountability is a huge issue. And it really, teachers are in a very awkward middle man, middle woman position oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And there are policies depending mm-hmm. on the district that can help teachers in that position and can hurt teachers in that position. So what are your thoughts on this, Peter? You're still in the system.
I'm still in doing time. When you say policy, I kind of chuckle because there are some policies written down. There are many policies written down, somewhere, typed out, everybody signs them, whatever, that are not enforced at all, right? And I think a lot of that is the politics behind it and such. I see there is opportunity in this, right? So, I'll go into right now, like the biggest challenge that we have is attendance, right? And it's happening everywhere, right? We have about 25% of our students in our high school are missing 10 plus days. That's data from last year, right? So it's going up. We see it. I see it, right? In my classes, I have probably 30 to 35% of students who are missing more than 10 days, excused or unexcused, right? Which, what are we supposed to be doing here, right? So my job, what I'm looking at is really trying to connect with the kid's business, right? So if the kid's not there, I'm going to try to get them the information as much as possible. Da, 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 da. But there's also missing out on great conversations and actually experiences in the room, right? So when we bring a business owner into the room and somebody's not there, that comes into play. So there, for all the naysayers out there, well, kids don't need to be in school. Well, that depends on what's going on in your school or in that class. So I want to make that really clear because a lot of kids are like, yeah, I can just check the boxes outside of school. Yeah, right. But if we want to really improve it, let's get everybody into an area. It could be in school, it could be out in the community or whatever. It could be a field trip, which we do a lot of those. So I think we really need to identify, what are we doing in the classrooms, right? Are we really engaging? Or are we doing a lot of worksheets or whatever, right? And I know you as a science teacher, right? There's a lot of engagement. I mean, you have got a lot of equipment. You've got a lot of labs, and that's why I love science. I just didn't like memorizing the parts for the test, but I remember, cutting into the fish, looking in the microphone or microphones, the micro.
Microscope.
I was like cutting the. Looking into the microphone. Yeah, maybe I
Don't
wasn't
edit
paying
that out.
attention. I don't know.
Leave
So,
it in. Leave the microphone in.
right. Well, now I, this is why I'm using a microphone. But I digress. But those types of things, those are things. So now, what you're saying is very interesting because the way our contract works, and maybe people don't know this, is we are evaluated 75% of our evaluation. Of who we are as educators individually is based on what we do, like in the evaluation process, right? We get observed, blah, blah, blah. We do a project actually. There's all different kinds of things, but most of it's observation and such. The other 25% of this is the test scores, state and standardized test scores. And this is prevalent throughout Illinois. I don't know where, maybe across the United States, but so if students are missing, if one out of four students are missing more than 10% of a semester, and then it's still put on us to actually help that student learn through, and then the measurement is a test score, we got a problem. We got a problem, right? So that's kind of the way I see it right there. I'm looking at attendance only so far, but we'll get into other accountability pieces.
So let's set the stage of kind of what prompted this conversation. So people, it'll be referenced in the show notes and everything. So there was an article, there's actually one that references another that came out in November of 2023, and it was all about well, the original article was teachers can't hold students accountable. It's making the job miserable. And then there was a response to that article, and it was what students are saying about accountability at school. And so it's looking at it from the initial perspective, and that's the video that went viral on social media about a teacher being like, look, do you want to know what it's really like? It's messy. It's because as a teacher, there are, I would use the word egregious policies now that prevent teachers from holding students accountable. So here's an interesting tidbit from the article about, and specifically to the attendance point, is that California and Los Angeles in particular, or San Francisco now, whatever, one of the major cities in California was talking about how they went from a graduation rate from 84% to 87%, which statistically, 3% increase in graduation rate is huge. Yet their attendance, the number of missing days from students doubled.
Wow.
Make that make sense, Peter? So it's like, now the big question that I think this article poses and this kind of conversation poses is, what is the goal of school?
Right.
Is it to pass? Is it to learn? Like, what does it mean to be present in school and be accountable to school? Because if you take a step back and you really understand, like, the goal, the kind of the vision casting of, like, why am I waking up and going to this building every day? If it's clear in the eyes of the teacher, the student, the parent, the community member, like, all, everybody's on board, you're not going to have attendance issues like we're having. The pandemic scrambled, you know, the learning kind of way, the traditional way. Like, you had to go to school in order to get the information. If you missed school, you were severely behind because that information was not easily accessible. So students would come to school sick. Post-pandemic, students didn't want to come to school because, and still, because they could just do it in a quarter of the time from their bed in their pajamas while scrolling TikTok. So there was no motivation to come to the physical school building, but that also speaks to, like, then, like, what was the purpose of their education? To watch a video and complete a worksheet? Or is it to have in-person relationships, you know, and community build and, like, learning in a project or with a team, or, like, you bring in people for your classroom? Like, those are vastly different experiences. And it's, if it's unclear to the student and there's an easier way, well, I don't blame students for saying, look, I don't want to come to school if I can just do everything from my bed.
Sure. I don't want to teach school if I can teach it from my bed.
I will say, I'll go on record and say that I actually enjoyed the time when I was teaching from my home, because it was a shorter time frame. Now there were things I didn't like about it, but I did like having a slower morning. I could sip coffee that I made in my own house. I could be wrapped up in my blanket. I could wear pajama pants while still teaching. And like, the kids would just turn everything in. I didn't have to shuffle all these papers. I mean, there were some things that were really good about that time. Now, it doesn't replace the experiments that kids missed out on and everything. Like, you can't. But, like, right, that there was this huge opportunity to really think about, like, what is the purpose of school? And what's the purpose of being in a physical building that we just kind of swept under the rug? And now it's roaring its head. With major accountability issues.
You know, the easiest path, everybody's going to take the easiest path. You know, we've talked to several people about pain, but, like, the pain that it takes to learn something. And if you like at that age, you're not going to want to endure any pain. Like you're going to not want to put yourself at any risk or whatever in front of people. It's just another reason why a lot of students don't like to do presentations and such like that, because they don't want to do it. So as much as they can hide at that age, which is age appropriate, I'm not saying that's, you know, terrible that people do that, but let's look at the world, right? In the world, you've got to promote who you are. You've got to do something. You got to show what you know. And I think that, you know, there was a couple of things back in December that I was writing in LinkedIn. I think the first thing was, here's an opportunity to do this, right? To look at the actual environment of school, right? And build, like, change the laws. So when you build something, it can't be classrooms. It's got to be experiences or something there. Kind of like Don Wetrick was saying, is let's the community, we can solve problems. It should be an in and out flowing place, right? We need to look at the structure of school, because unfortunately, well, fortunately, however you want to look at it, we're building onto our school right now, and it's the same thing as it was when they built the school in 1970s. Okay, it's fancier, it's got some skylights, maybe a little bit of better HVAC system, blah, 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 but it's the same damn thing. It's desks, it's rooms, and, you know, it's sit and get, which I'm, you know, we need to really investigate the way, like if a kid comes into a classroom that looks like it's from 1990 now, I know, I'm like, what? But 1990 now, who the hell wants to do that as a teen? Like you've got to really be creative. That's one thing. And the second thing is, and again, I know they're one of our sponsors, but like the kids need to own their learning. It can't be the teachers own the learning. They cannot wait for me to give them the feedback. They actually have to create what they're learning. And this is why I'm a huge proponent of profiles of a graduate or portfolios like SpikeView, but like putting these things out to where kids learn to own this. They own it. Mm-hmm. And then they have capabilities of sending it themselves to anybody else in, out there, right? Why are we not holding them accountable with their own learning? So it kind of is, the system is actually already teaching that learned helplessness, so I don't have to be accountable, right? Like it's almost like you got a three-year-old and he throws up on your shoulder, you're like, ah, not accountable, right? But if you have a kid who's in high school now and they didn't do something or didn't understand something, but you know, in the situation that we are in as educators, where we have 150 to 200 students every single day, and we might have missed one or two here and there during a lesson. What's the best way to do this? Well, we need to go younger and teach that accountability, and then teach them actually how to log their freaking journey. All right. I'm getting heated up here, Allie. I'm getting heated up.
It's a big issue. And yeah. We haven't even addressed what I think is the wildest policy that is being swept under the rug, in mm-hmm. my opinion. It's not main stage, and if you're not aware of it, you're about to be. It's the 50% rule.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, different districts are going to have different policies. And this is not a every school district has this, but it's becoming more and more common. Mm-hmm. And basically what the policy is that no matter whether a kid does an assignment or not, whatever grade they get on it, the minimum that they can get is 50%. Mm-hmm. And even if they do nothing, even if they cheat on it, they never do it, they got a 10% on it because like what they turned in doesn't meet any of the expectations, they get a 50%. The idea behind it is that, you know, a failing grade is from 0 to 60.
Right.
And that giving kids a zero creates a deficit that a student cannot dig themselves out of. Mm-hmm. And so by giving them a 50%, then they are, you know, if they wanted to show what they've learned and whatnot, they aren't coming out of a potentially 60% deficit hole. Then right. they only have to make up a 10% hole. That's sure. that's the argument for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that if a kid doesn't turn anything in or cheats
yeah.
or literally writes nonsense on the assignment,
mm-hmm.
that they're going to get 50%, to me, is a it is driving teachers out. It will continue to drive teachers out. And when you think about the inability for teachers to hold students accountable, this is a pressing issue. My right. district did not have this policy. If they tried to implement a policy like this, there would be a lot of kickback from mm-hmm. the teachers. And I'm certain that there are teachers who feel helpless with a policy mm-hmm. like that, because more kids are going to pass. And the article from the student's perspective was basically like, yeah, kids will game whatever system
yep.
that you give them.
Yeah.
So if you just make the game infinitely easier, I need to do less to pass my classes.
Yeah.
Guess what? You just incentivized students to do less. That's
all you did.
Is
yeah.
what the students were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be a teacher, and we're at a 50-year low, by the way, of people going into teaching, mm-hmm. a 50-year low. And we're not trying to be like doomsday, like blow up your, you know, life on a Wednesday here in February. We want, like, if we're trying to disrupt education.
Right.
Like,
get people thinking.
You need to understand, like, what are the biggest issues that mm-hmm. are causing people to leave? And it's because of outdated policies and creating an environment that is very challenging for teachers to navigate. It's not why they got into the profession.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to get in the profession to have 25 students in a class period being basically bumps on a log, knowing they don't have to do anything to pass yeah. this class, then turn in a few things well, and the rest they're going to get 50% on no matter what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to learn anything.
So I absolutely hate grades. I think grades are the stupidest thing ever. I think now, before I say what I'm about to say, though, it is what it is. I don't think they're going away anytime soon. Maybe, but I do think, like I said, like, look, at the end of the day, you take this class, you build your portfolio, you show what you know, and guess what? The world's going to judge you. I'm not going to judge you. I'm just going to offer you the opportunity to build these things and practice and da, 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 da. So we become like coaches or mentors, right? That's the way I see it. And say all you want about, like, you know, kids who have more and kids who don't have more. Look, man, this is life. You know, this is the, and yeah, we can stack the deck in a way where kids can get more help, right? In at the end of the day, rather than what's better. Let's be honest. If you have a kid who is not, home life is terrible, right? And is struggling on a grade, and I would say almost sympathy is happening where somebody's walking them through just saying, da, 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 okay, well, we'll get you to a D in this class. And this happens to get them through because we know, like, okay, maybe they're struggling at home, blah, 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 right? Or if you have like three or four mentors around that person and is constantly looking at their portfolio and helping them build that. So for a chemistry class, you're like, show me what you can do in chemistry now. Okay. Let me tweak that. Let's go back into that and you recreate it here. And then rather than just saying, oh, well, I'll give you a few more points for this D minus, like which right. one is better, right? To me, that's yep. It is a 100% shot of let's set this kid up to show what they know. And then let's build on what they know. Now, my question is, what if? So I know the 50% rule, whatever, right? I get what they're trying to do. What if we changed the grading system to 0 to 9% is an F, 10% to, you see what I'm saying? 10% is a D cutoff, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% is the A+. Right? Isn't that what they're trying to do, really? I mean, they should be, but I think they're trying to get kids through. Let's be honest. But, like, you know, I don't know. What do you think about that?
I mean,
I just disrupted your thought process.
You did. No, but I mean, like, but this is what this article brings up. And, you know, it's this whole idea is like, what is the purpose of school? And, and so is it to get a grade, get a letter on a piece of paper? Apparently it is for most school districts. Like that's what it has kind of boiled down to. And we lose the richness of learning when we have to score them. I mean, when I have students come back, you know, after my class, they never are like telling me about, oh man, I remember getting this grade on this test. They talk about like, oh my gosh, do you remember when we made slime or you lit our hands on fire?
Right.
Or, you know, we got to see, or like we had to separate this mixture and you didn't give us any help. And, you know, like they remember these learning experiences and like what they remember is not the worksheets and
they
the
were
grades.
Accountable to perform. That's what we're getting to. They're accountable. That's why kids don't like to do, most kids, not all, like to do presentations in front of people, right? Because they are exposing themselves. But I will tell you, as an entrepreneurship teacher, one of the first and like last things that we do are presentation, presentation, presentation. I get kids who are like, I don't want to present. And I'm like, I don't care. You're going to have to present yourself when you, if you want to go to college, you're going to have to present yourself to them. If you're going to, you know, get a job, like if you're going to, you know, you've got to be able to show what you know, period. Otherwise, this whole thing's a joke, right? And they have to perform. They have to do, not a test. They have to do. And that's why they remember it, right? So we have to hold, they're accountable. They have to be accountable to do something. Because if they don't, like kids can like slide sheets of paper on a test and cheat and do this and that, and like glance at their phone when the teacher's not looking, you know, they can do that because they're not holding themselves accountable. But when you're on a stage, Allie, like this, right? Like you have got to be accountable. And that's why I'm like, I'm always about show what you know, show what you know. And I think one of the questions that I'm asking a lot of students now and going into, you know, this year is, are you proud of what you turned in? And that gets them. That gets them big time. Because they're just like, you know, this now is not just school. And that's all I tell them. And, you know, as a business teacher, I think, to me, you know, it's very difficult when kids start to fluff off business and like internship classes and things like that. And I'm like, do you guys realize here's what I'm doing? I'm giving you a ton of opportunities. You can take them or you can leave them, whatever. You're accountable for your choices and your decisions. But my goal is actually to give you all these things. So when I see you later on, either you're running with them and you're making things happen, or you're complaining about school and it's going to be online and I'm going to find you and I'm going to say, no, 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 you weren't accountable.
It's basically the mentality of like going to school is like getting a participation trophy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I think right now. We're headed rapidly towards like, congratulations, you showed up, so that's all you needed to do. No learning needed to occur. You can just be a passive consumer and you don't have to create, you don't have to really, you know, maybe memorize some facts here or there, but even if you don't pass, like you know like you can retake as much as you want, you can copy, you can cheat, and like the burden falls on teachers oftentimes. Yep. And one of the things that was the most challenging for me as an educator was when a student wasn't doing well, the conversation from my first year to my 10th year, continued to shift into what are you doing to mm-hmm. help my kid pass?
Right.
not holding the student. The first questions were not mm-hmm. near the end of my career. And many teachers can attest to this. This is not like a shock and awe moment. If it mm-hmm. is for you, well, like as an educator, the pendulum is so far on like, what are the teachers doing? And you have to document everything. If you are even possibly going to fail a student, mm-hmm. it is like everyone under the sun will come to your room and will email you a course near the end of the semester, which yeah. is one of the worst times for educators, as it's already busy. And it is like, what are you doing to help Billy or Susie pass your class? Like, mm-hmm. What resources have you provided? What opportunities have you given them to resubmit work? And it's like all of your classroom policies go out the window.
Yeah.
And the only focus is on what are you doing to help them pass your class?
It's very accusatory. It's like, you feel like you're accused of a crime, and you do. Like, I'm not talking like, look, we all know there's terrible teachers out there. I'm not going to lie, but I'm talking about, look, every single day, you know, I had an email. I remember last semester, I emailed a student who actually emailed me on the last day to get things in. Right. And I emailed him back. He's like, well, can I have another day? Right. And I was like, no, I'm sorry, but let me give you the facts. Right. Over 70 hours in class we had to do, and it's not, I mean, it's stuff that they have 24/7 access to. It was yes. Code HS working on some coding and stuff, right? And I would help them through every day. Guys, make sure you get off your phones. I was holding the grade as a carrot, but I'm like, look, this is going to work up into a project, which we're into right now. Gave him the stats. I was like, dude, there was over 28 times where you slept, and I was trying to get you up and waking up and going, and or you were choosing not to do this. And not even that, but like in the times that you were awake, maybe at home or wherever, where we have given you a Chromebook, blah, blah, blah. I was like, so basically you made your choices, and I appreciate you asking me, because if you don't know, if you never ask, the answer is always going to be no. But right now it's going to be no, and here's why. I will, and this is what's so interesting about that article that you're talking about, Allie. Kids respect that.
They do.
Kids want that. Kids are saying, we are treated like babies and we don't want to be. And I'm not talking about like hardcore, you know, paddle back in the day crap. I'm talking about just getting like being in the moment. Behaviorally, I'm not talking about 504 or IEPs and things like that. I'm talking about behavior, right? In really being in a discussion or a place to where you're creating something in an experience. And I think that's what the most important thing here to take away is. If we want to do what's right for kids that actually kids want, it's actually to hold accountability and hold this thing on a pedestal. I don't know if it's an age of parenting. I don't know if it's an age of whatever. But, you know, the way, I'll be honest, I think number one, everybody should read Pam Roy's book. I mean, that gives kind of a landscape of how do you give the kid the wheel, but you know what? Let them screw it up. Right. And you know, that's the one thing. And even when, you know, my daughter and son had challenges with coaches and different things like that, I didn't talk to the coach. I said, you're going to email the coach. You have three opportunities here. So one, you can stick it out and not say a word. Number two, you can stay at the level you are and say, can I be a leader? Or three, if you think you should be at a higher level, then write both coaches and say, what do I need to do to get to the next level? Other than that, you made your decision to join and you're going to go, right? And the answer is always, okay. I don't know. Like, and again, I know that some parents are not around for that, but if our educators are just letting them do whatever, we got a problem. There's opportunity here though. I mean, I don't want to let go of that opportunity.
it is, it's letting students fail, like,
yeah,
and redefining the word failure. And
yeah,
you know, it's not about failing on a grade. It's just like, it's okay to stumble and mess up. Like, I
sure.
can't tell you how many times it would come down to the end of the semester, and if a student was failing, I mean, it always broke my heart. It's like, I didn't want this for them. I mean, no
Yeah. You
educator like
feel
goes
you
in.
do real. There is a sense of responsibility you feel as a teacher.
You do, and that it comes with the territory. The end of the day, I remember having these conversations. Said, "This isn't what you want, but maybe it's what you need." Like,
Yeah.
to retake a course, to have to redo something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't see that as a bad thing. Like, sometimes you just aren't ready for that lesson in life. Like,
Yep.
you aren't ready for that course. You aren't ready for that learning environment. That's okay.
Yeah.
There's so much opportunity there. Now, the structure of school, that is obviously these policies we're bringing to you guys, all of you, attention, so that you can be aware of some of the detrimental policies, you know, and the opportunities there to challenge them or kind of push against them. And it definitely comes from a strong community saying, like, this is what our vision of school looks like. It doesn't have to be what everybody else does.
Sure.
And that's really the beautiful opportunity, is those conversations aren't fun. I mean, a lot of these accountability conversations, they're not pleasant, but at the end of the day, it is super important to be like, failure is not the end. It's just the beginning.
Yeah.
And when it comes to education, I think one of the main goals should be to have, like, failure be a normal part of the process, where students can fail in a safe environment. They can be supported through that and learn and grow, because that's actually where you learn and grow so much more, is when you don't get it right. It doesn't matter if it's on a problem, on you failed like just one problem, or you failed a whole test, or you failed a whole class, or like whatever level of failure that is, that's actually where the most learning and growth happens.
It's
not when you get everything right.
Yeah, it's where I've done it in the class. I mean, I've failed many times in the class, a lot. I mean, I feel like I've failed the entire class. You know, it's you're right on that. I do remember in college, like, I failed. Well, I was failing accounting, and then I withdrew from the class my freshman year, and then I went back to take it later on my junior year, and I did way better, right? But I had to pay for it, right? Like, I still had to pay for that class, you know? So it was like, you know, like, that's life. But again, like, we have set it up, I think, you know, to when there's no accountability, self-accountability, then, you know, like I said, if I'm going to sit down every night and have somebody feed me whatever I want, that's going to be, I'm going to do that, but I'll never learn to cook. Never learned to cook. And so, and I love to cook, but, you know, like, I think that's what we're doing. If you're going to sit down and have people just feed you academics, and I'm using quotes for those who are not seeing on YouTube, they're just going to eat academics as, this doesn't even make sense and school is stupid. Right. So I like this. I like this. There are some opportunities. I'm telling you, what we're talking about here is, you know, having these conversations with your student, number one, is all the students in class, especially if you're in high school or middle school, even in elementary school, expectations and then accountability. And then, you know, I think as I got older, I stopped, you know, being afraid of administration and whatever, you know, and I was like, look, no, this is how it is. And our courses in business grew because we push kids. Because there's nothing like working hard and then at the end of a semester, you're done and you're like, wow, man, I really did something there. And there's something really demoralizing about not doing something all the way through a semester, watching TikTok all the way through, napping in class, to that actually makes you feel worse. So we have these conversations in classes with students all the time. And, you know, students get it. Some students are not ready, and some students get it. So, but what are your final thoughts on accountability here? Let's be, you're now accountable for these final thoughts.
I have a great final thought. So I want to challenge all of our listeners, anyone who has stayed with us for this conversation. And I want you to think back to what was the most rewarding class in high school for you. And I am going to pretty much guarantee it was a class that challenged you and someone who held you accountable at a higher level. And I would always tell my chemistry students, I said, they'd be like, Miss Privet, this class is really hard and challenging. And I said, why don't you make it easier? You know? And I'd said, 10 years from now, you aren't going to remember the classes that you did nothing in. And you will thank me. I'm waiting for that delayed gratification in 10 years time. When you're sitting around with your high school friends at the 10 year reunion, and you're like, you know what my favorite class was? It was chemistry with Miss Privet, because she held me accountable to learning and being a better human being. And that class set me up for more success than any of the other ones.
Nice. I love it. Speech and drama in high school and finance in college. Those are my two classes. I can tell you right now, that's what it was. We had to perform, we had to do stuff. And then in my master's degree, I remember it was a research class. I hated the research, but the guy was like, let me tell you something, man. What I'm giving you right now is, this is what you should have known this. And I was like, whoa, man, this guy's coming at us. And he was right. He was right. I never really understood how to research all the way through my bachelor's and even in the high school, you know, correctly research. And it was hard. It was hard. Those are hard courses. Love that. Love that. So y'all think about those courses. Think about the difficulties that you had, but then think about that one class that you did nothing in. Well, which one do you feel better about? Love it, Allie. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us, everybody. We're going to hold you accountable to go to the next one too. So just FYI. No, really, there. Like I said, that, you know, let's look at some different ways. If you have some comments, some different ways that you're looking at being accountable, showing accountability, helping people on your team, in your classroom, wherever, be accountable. Let's share it out. This is 2024. We got to move forward. We're going to disrupt education some more. So for Allie Privet, I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We'll catch you next time. We're holding you accountable next time on the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.